Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to It's Rainmaking Time. This is Kim Greenhouse. The subject that we're going to discuss today on this show is very painful, very complex, very difficult. I've been interested in this for a long time. I've looked into this, and there's a part of what I'm going to introduce to you today that I really need help with because I can't sort it out. 9/11 was one of the most traumatic events in U.S. history. It made us rethink our notion of safety, the feeling of what local and national means. Most of us are still dealing with the ramifications of 9/11. People are psychologically wounded about it, and it's a very sensitive area, and it's become so sensitive that there's almost very little room to talk about it. And those that talk about it and question it and are investigating and trying to figure out what they saw on television of complete building collapses in 6 seconds just shook a lot of people's view of what they saw. It defied science. Most of us are still asking, what happened to the buildings? 3 buildings, one of them that wasn't even hit by an object. I had to invite Dr. Judy Wood at drjudywood.com, who has a PhD in materials engineering science, has several degrees actually, to help explain how come the buildings came down the way they did. What is her take on it? Help us understand what we saw with our eyes that doesn't make any sense to us. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Dr. Judy Wood to It's Rainmaking Time.
Hello, thank you for having me.
My pleasure. When I say my pleasure, I should say it's a sad state of affairs, what we're about to talk about, but I feel like we have to continue to talk about it. Not to talk about the politics of it, not to try to sort out all the intricate matrices of people and agencies and world-coordinated things that happen on the political side or geopolitical side. I just want to understand the science of what happened to the buildings. And it's never sat right with me to watch those buildings go down the way they did. And it hasn't sat properly with people who have your kind of experience all over the world. I want to say a special message to It's Rainmaking Time listeners to please suspend your need to judge, suspend your need to know, suspend your need to espouse the official story of what happened to the buildings, and know that it's part of a democratic society, it's part of a free speech society, it's part of being a good citizen to actually look into this more fully, to try to understand what we saw with our eyes. It'll put a part of what happened into a context for further examination for years to come. All right, Dr. Judy Wood, talk to us about what happened with the buildings that we saw first.
Well, I'll start out. I began looking at all of the images, and there's I'm in the process of getting a book published, and there's a little bit I would like to read from it about these images. And from one of the chapters I wrote, looking at these images can be difficult. It was too difficult for me until I realized that these people in the images were communicating to us. They want us to hear them, and they want their stories told. Once I realized this, I could not look away, for I had made them a promise to look at what they were trying to tell us. And in various chapters in this book, I attempt to fulfill that promise to them, to find out what happened. And that, to me, has been the main thing. Not who done it. That's downstream from it. I also say I don't believe that our government is responsible for doing this, nor do I believe that our government was not responsible for this. This is not a case of belief. It's a crime that needs to be investigated with a scientific study of the evidence before you can determine who did it. And, you know, we were immediately told who did it and how they did it before we even knew what was done. It's kind of like taking somebody, charging somebody with murder and with a gun, and you haven't even determined if the body has bullet holes in it. And what I've found is the body does not have bullet holes in it. And so that's what I've been exploring.
You know, I have to tell you that there's a lot of pressure today in society not to talk about 9/11, except in a memorial context. And because there's a lot of pressure not to talk about it, because of the laws that have been put into place, people feel pressure not to talk about it, not to look at it, not to examine it, not to even verify what they saw with their eyes. So that makes a certain limitation in discussing it in general, A, and B, you're called a conspiracy theorist if you go into your own examination. Well, you've done it.
Because I don't deal with whodunit. I do not deal with conspiracy theory at all. A conspiracy is where two or more people plot to do a crime. Well, I'm not talking about who plotted what and who was standing where and who did what to whom when. I'm just talking about the physical evidence. And physical evidence cannot be considered a conspiracy theory. It's a forensic study. It's an engineering study. An analysis of the evidence has nothing to do with whodunit. So there shouldn't be any pressure, but there is because it contradicts the story we were giving.
Well, talk to us about what we saw with our eyes first, would you?
Well, on that day, what I saw and what I heard were two different things. And whenever that happens, I block out what I'm hearing. I just don't hear it. It's just one of my quirks. And what I saw on TV looked like a sweater unraveling. And I thought to myself, wait, how would a building look? No, it wouldn't look like, no, that doesn't look like that. It just did not make sense at all. How a building, you know, peels like a banana. And knowing about, you know, mechanics and my area of expertise is in physical observation. So I did some quick calculations about how long it would take, you know, they're saying it pancake down. Well, if the top floor pancakes the next one, pancakes the next one, yeah, it's like 12 foot apart hands clapping. If the building completely went away in 8 seconds, that the North Tower, the ground shook for only 8 seconds, how many times can you clap your hands in 8 seconds?
Let me try. I don't know. I don't know how many that was.
It sure wasn't 110.
You mean 110 floors?
Yeah, we had 110 floors that supposedly pancaked down in 8 seconds, according to the official story.
I saw the image of, is it an earthquake in Pakistan that you had an image of that looked very different than the 9/11 buildings? Very different.
Right. It was an apartment building, and it looked like, you know, all the floors there, they're just closer together, stacked up like pancakes. So if you have a pancake collapse, you should have a stack of pancakes at the bottom when it's over with. And instead, we saw it like nothing. There's pictures taken, well, as soon as the dust cleared, within, you know, 20 minutes, where you could see completely at ground level across the World Trade Center complex and no building in the way. Where, you know, that morning, you had a 110-story building right there. And you can see an ambulance that was parked right outside the front door of Tower 1. And the ambulance is still there, almost in pristine condition. There's just nothing else around it.
Well, how is that possible? What is your take on this? I haven't gone through your entire website.
One thing I think is very important here is to not try to jump to conclusions. If you try to jump to conclusions, you end up maybe taking a false choice. It's like taking a multiple choice test without the right, you know, choices being in there.
Okay.
And so I just started looking at the evidence, and my theory is if you listen to it carefully enough, it'll tell you exactly what happened. If you don't know what happened, just keep listening until it does tell you. Don't force it. And so I just started looking at the images as though I was walking around the site. You could feel it, you could smell it, you could taste it. And, you know, I could close my eyes now and walk around the site and know just where things are. And knowing what was, and I started noticing some bizarre things, like windows with circular holes in them, as though someone took a glass cutter and just made a perfectly round hole, no cracks. And when you talk about suppression of any discussion of 9/11, my question is, what does the physics teacher tell the student when he says, "Teacher, but when I throw a baseball through my window, it leaves a starburst pattern, like a spider web. It doesn't just make a perfectly round hole without cracking the rest of the window." Not only that, the windows were like double paned, and only the outside has a hole, and the inside is still intact.
I don't get that. I don't know what you mean.
Yeah, it's pretty strange. And I don't think a glass cutter could even do that under the best circumstances. How do you make a, you know, score a perfectly round hole? And you start noticing missing buildings. Like, you thought it was just three buildings. No, it's seven buildings that were destroyed that day.
I didn't know that. I don't think a lot of people knew that.
Right. There's four, you know, skyscrapers. The Marriott is 22 stories tall. It almost completely went away except for one stub at one end that's like, you know, two stories tall and just about as wide. And there were people that survived it. The people that were in that little corner survived. And there weren't, you know, remains of the other ones found. It's like the building just went away completely. If something landed on it, would you have something, you know, collapsed above it, crushed? And Building 4 is another bizarre one. That was on the southeast corner, adjacent to Tower 2. The main body of it completely went away, to the point you could almost sweep it up with a broom.
When did you first find out about these other buildings? I never even heard about these other buildings.
From looking at all the photographic evidence. I don't listen to what other people say. I look at the images, and what do I see? And so I started looking and having more questions. The north wing of Building 4 is still there, as though somebody cut it off with an X-Acto knife. You could look in and see what's on somebody's desk inside. It sort of reminds me of when I was a child, we went through Topeka, Kansas, right after they had that humongous tornado go through there, and it cut an apartment building right in half. And you could see somebody's made bed in there, and their dresser, and some books on the dresser. What I saw in Building 4 looked just like that. That it was just like something sliced the building. It wasn't anything halfway, you know, crumbled and rubble in front of the doorway. Mm-hmm. Like somebody sliced the building. And then you look at Building 5, and it's got cylindrical cutouts in it, like somebody took a post hole digger. And Building 6 really has a bunch of them, too. About 50% of the mass of the building is gone, down to the ground. It's just like somebody took a post hole digger and cut it all out. They look like cylindrical cutouts that are about 24 feet in diameter. And there was a survivor standing, a firefighter who was standing in the lobby of this eight-story building, right next to the center with his buddies. And then everything went black. And when things cleared, he looked up at the blue sky. He was on the first floor.
Wow.
And he knew his buddies were gone. I don't know what would have happened if he'd reached out and held on to one. But it was just down to ground level, not below ground.
Could we say, as you're describing what you're describing, is that a form of being vaporized or something?
I wouldn't say vaporized.
Okay.
This guy would have been cooked. Vaporization implies heat. And one thing I'll warn you about my language, if I don't know what a mechanism is, or if I don't know what a phenomenon is, I use a generic word, simple word. I could say phenomenon number 287-3A, but that's too hard to remember. So I give it another name, like, okay, I don't know what happened to the building, but it turned to dust, so I use the word dustification.
Okay, I got it. Now, I do want to talk about Building 7, if you want to say anything about that. I'm sure there's plenty to say, but that's another one.
Building 7.
What the heck happened to that building?
It seems like it was set up as a sort of a false choice, you know, either the official story or bombs in the building, where neither one apply, because there's no detectable seismic signal associated with that building going away. I won't say collapse, because, you know, it doesn't match that phenomenon either. The building went away, and video cameras a block or two north of there were carrying on conversations. You could hear the conversations, and you heard nothing of the building in the background. Whisper quiet. And it should sound like it was raining dump trucks. You know, each floor is a 47-story building, and each floor is the size of a football field. And, you know, thousands of dump trucks crashing down. You hear a dump truck rumbling down the street at night. It'll wake you up. So imagine a whole bunch of them being dropped. You know, the ground should shake. But it didn't even, hardly register on the Richter scale. Most of the seismic stations could not detect it from background noise.
They talked about, I can't remember the guy's name, I think it was Larry Silverstein, told someone in the fire department to pull it. I mean, we have a, I've seen that. So I don't know if that was deliberately pulled, but even if it was pulled, are you saying that the phenomenon of how the building left is an anomaly?
Oh, yes. It's nothing we've ever seen before. It has for the Silverstein pull it comment that a lot of people like to quote. And they say, well, it was blown up with dynamite. I laugh and say, do firefighters go around with sticks of dynamite in their back pocket just in case? You know, fire departments also don't destroy buildings. So why would you tell the fire chief to blow up the building? It makes no sense.
What is an anomaly?
Out of the ordinary.
Okay. Okay.
Something unusual. And that whole site is just that. So, you know, the two towers go away. I like how you say they left. Yeah. I don't say collapse. They did not collapse.
Didn't they turn to dust? It was like a plume. It was the most bizarre thing. That's what freaked everybody out. Everything was pulverized. What the heck? What do you think it was?
Like the top of Tower 2, and it started to tip over, it turned to dust before anything hit the ground. It was just poof, you know, mid-flight pulverization. In order to pulverize something, you have to slam it against something else. Like that, controlled demolitions, that's what they do. They cut out the bottom supports and slam the building to the ground. So you get a big earthquake kind of signal. Well, I started looking into more things, and actually it was that tipping top of the South Tower where I got one of my major aha moments that, you know, you think of water turning to steam, the water molecules need 1,600 times as much volume to, you know, when they turn to steam. That's how you get steam explosions, the sudden expansion. And so I'm thinking of that, and I'm looking at these buildings. I'm wondering, I wonder if solids can do something like that. And then thinking, okay, molecules and atoms are attracted to each other. Is it possible to flip the switch and get them to repel each other? That's kind of what it looked like. And I started looking into things and, okay, come upon the Casimir force, which is, you know, very small-scale attractive forces. And if you could somehow reverse that, and sure enough, there was some evidence of that. There's a new article that had come out. But then I came upon the website of John Hutchison. And I was looking at his blog, and I saw these photos. He had something about the Casimir forces. And his photos looked like the World Trade Center on a smaller scale. He had replicated every single one of the phenomena that I had tabulated.
What are we really talking about then?
Some kind of energy phenomenon.
Are you talking about scalar energy?
I don't ever name it because that again, it forces you into the corner of picking. When I was looking at this stuff, I didn't know there was such a thing as directed energy weapons.
Oh, definitely.
I had no idea, but the evidence told me there was. Another phenomenon that was interesting is right after the North Tower went poof, the dust cloud rolls out, there's a photo about a block upwind looking west, and you see a clear blue sky. And then you notice around the feet of the firefighters is this fine stuff, I call it fuzzballs, you know, fluffy stuff popping up. And then pretty soon, you know, 20 minutes later, you notice it's rising all by itself. Well, if that was so fine, how did it settle out of the air? The only conclusion I could come up with is that it's coarse dust that lands and then becomes fine dust.
Kind of like a nano thing?
Well, it's that the particles are continuing to break down. So as it flies through the air, it's like all the molecules are separating from each other and keep breaking down. And the size particles actually that were measured were finer than anything anyone had ever seen at any kind of pollution, you know, air pollution of like oil fires in Kuwait or anything that's been studied by far.
Is this why there were so many accounts of dust particles everywhere? Just everything had turned to dust, except for some steel?
Even the steel. I mean, you look at what's left, and it's not enough to account for the amount of steel in the building. And another interesting thing, when you look at the rubble pile, that's a little bit of a stretch to call it a pile, there's no toilets. None. No parts of it that you can recognize. And they're very easily recognizable. You see a tornado go through someplace, and you see pieces of the toilet around. They're shiny, and they're smooth. And
what does that mean?
You should have about 3,000 of them, you know, in the World Trade Center. Something affected porcelain and glass differently. You know, different materials were affected differently. And the thing that I really got into is the toasted cars. I call them toasted as in their toast, their history. Something got them. I don't know what happened to them. They're up to a half mile away. And there's eyewitnesses that saw spontaneous combustion over on the East River. They thought it must be a fireball that came, you know, rolling away from the Trade Center.
But could a fireball toast everything in a car?
This can't be explained by a fireball, because you have something completely toasted and a nanometer over, completely pristine. And that was the biggest aha moment that told me it was an interference of different types of energy fields. You think of photographic paper, how you can have distinct differences in boundaries, you know, crisp, high contrast, because you block out the light one place or the other. How can you do that in a car sitting under FDR Drive?
Talk about direct energy. Tell us what you know about it.
Okay, my area of expertise is moire interferometry.
What is that?
It's an interference of optical energy, and I use that to measure deformations on a very fine level. And in areas where the beams interfere, you get constructive interference or destructive interference. In other words, they add or they cancel. So you can arrange things so that you can have abrupt boundaries where you have nothing or you have, you know, severe effects. And so when I saw this circular spot on a car that was not toasted and everything around it was toasted, yeah, except brand new wax job in the back end, front end, like, totally gone. Front door gone, back door, brand new wax job in pristine condition. These abrupt boundaries got me thinking that. And the reason why I call it directed energy weapons, that's as I'll conclude what did it, is that it's energy that's directed and is used as a weapon. I'm not referring to ray beams from outer space or, you know, anything like that. It's just it's an energy weapon versus, like, you know, that's directed versus a kinetic energy device like a bullet or a missile or, you know, bombs that explode and pieces go flying.
Okay.
That's something that physically hits something.
Well, obviously this we can't see.
Right. And it's an energy field or an interference of energy fields. And John Hutchison, who can reproduce every one of these same effects, uses a Tesla coil or a Van de Graaff generator to create an electrostatic field, and within that interferes some other kind of energy like microwave or some other radio frequency signal. And what is very interesting is I noticed on 9/11, did you know that we had a Category 3 hurricane right outside of town?
No, I didn't know that.
For 4 days, it was moving in a beeline straight to New York City. It got there at 8 o'clock in the morning right outside of town, pulled up to a chalk line, stopped, you know, turned around, and that afternoon headed out of town. Pretty interesting. So I got to looking at, you know, first of all, why didn't they warn the people that you might have flooding? It isn't about the hurricane hitting the town or hitting the city. It's about the storm surges, and, you know, Manhattan's at sea level. Imagine trying to evacuate Manhattan. You might want to give people warning that, you know, like they did with Hurricane Bill recently. Last August, they warned people that they might want to think about leaving. Or
right.
It wasn't mandatory yet, but it might be. And then Hurricane Bill diverted off. So why didn't they tell anybody? And why wasn't it on the morning news where the hurricane was? It wasn't on the weather map. You know, how much does it take to put a pinwheel icon on? So let's see what hurricanes do, and I got to looking at it. Well, you know, people with arthritis talking about feeling a storm as it's approaching. They can feel it in their bones. There's something different in the atmosphere electrically.
Yes.
And then they feel better after the storm has passed. Ahead of the storm, you have an electrostatic field. There's a different amount of ionization and so forth in the air. And at 9/11, at LaGuardia Airport, Newark Airport, and JFK Airport, the three main airports that surround Manhattan, all recorded thunder on 9/11. The outer bands of Hurricane Erin, which is the largest hurricane of the 2001 season, the outer bands were over the tip of Long Island and right outside of Boston. And I believe it was, you know, raining pretty well on Cape Cod. So it was, you know, not only was it close enough, we have evidence of the dry thunder ahead of a storm, showing that you had this electrostatic atmosphere. So I got to looking at other things, and I discovered that the Earth's magnetic field varied for 20 minutes before the North Tower got its whole, I don't say hit, because that's making a conclusion, hit with who knows what, before that first hole appeared in the North Tower. For 20 minutes, the Earth's magnetic field started drifting to one direction, and as soon as that hole appeared, it drifted back. And it stopped drifting back right when the second tower got its hole.
How do you know that? Where do you get that kind of information?
The magnetometer recordings in Alaska at six different magnetometer stations. And I have that evidence on my website. A better chart will be in my book. But there's a distinct, you know, it's like a chevron. It goes down, and right where within a few seconds, as close as the data gets of when the North Tower got its hole. Matter of fact, there's different reports. The NIST report has some values. Lamont Doherty has other values. And yeah, I can tell you which one's the closest. It's kind of interesting. You know, the 9/11 report has and the NIST report has. There's different values. They're around that same time. They're within a few seconds, plus or minus. Too much coincidence.
If what you're saying is verified and verifiable through all these different spokes or aspects of the forensics of those buildings on 9/11, what does it tell us? What does this mean?
It tells us that, it was a demonstration of free energy technology. I got to looking at it further, and Nikola Tesla had proposed using this technology, but then decided not to because it might be used for evil.
Do you know who owns his weather engineering patents? Raytheon. They weren't going to let him do what he had known.
But within an hour or so, while the body was still warm, they broke into his safe.
I didn't know that.
Freedom of Information request. They finally unclassified his documents in 1980. It's pretty interesting stuff. One of them, he had a way of protecting the U.S., that you put if the U.S. government had paid for the satellites every 150 miles around towers, like radio power towers, you know, if they paid for those towers at every 150 miles around the perimeter of the U.S., Tesla said he could install devices on each one that would dematerialize any object that tried to pass through the plane, vertical plane.
Wow.
Between those. I thought that was interesting.
Wow. Well, don't you think the powers that be at the highest, 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 highest level already have all that?
Oh, they are.
I mean, I'm saying I don't know who they are, but they know who they are. And for something to be out this long, I'm sure that that knowledge is available at the highest level around the world.
Oh, of course. There's something else kind of interesting that I went to get the light I was putting together, and the fellow that was helping me, I was talking to him about this, and asking if he knew the name Nikola Tesla. No, he didn't. Well, have you heard of AC power, alternating current? Oh, of course. You've heard of Thomas Edison? Oh, yeah, of course. Well, Tesla is the one that invented AC current and is responsible for the fact that we have AC current. But yet, you know, they call it Con Edison, Toledo Edison, Southern California Edison. That was interesting.
I know. Well, it's very interesting. Actually, he was one of the most interesting men on the planet. So if this is evidence of direct energy weapon use, people are responding to what they see with their eyes. They saw many things with their eyes. They saw this building turn to dust and disappear and go down in front of their eyes. They saw planes hitting the buildings. That's a whole other thing.
And airplanes can't destroy buildings, turn buildings to powder, so they're kind of a non-issue.
So how come most of the public accepts this story? Seriously, is it that it's too painful to look into? Is it too painful to examine? Because then it leaves us feeling helpless.
If you're in a crowd and the police yell, "Get down on the ground," you bet just about everybody gets down on the ground. They don't ask why. And in a terrorized situation, and that is traumatic for whoever was there, you know, first impressions stick. And so if you're in this fear state and you're told the story, you know, you accept it. And you don't want to look back because that means to relive the event. And so who wants to look back?
I would say most of us don't. And that's why I haven't done a show about this, because it took me a while to really gather the courage to be willing to look and open this up to the public. A lot of the people that have opened it up have issues with governments, have issues with leadership, and can't just look at the forensics as you are. I think you're incredibly courageous to do this. Haven't you had a lot of death threats or danger imposed on you?
When I started doing this, I was a faculty member at a major university. My mom said, if you start doing this, you won't have a career. My answer was, if I don't do this, nobody will have a career. I feel it's that important. If everyone knows about this technology, it kind of takes the power away of the, you know, takes the games up. But as long as people, you know, run in fear, you know, like cattle. An aspect that, you know, for me, I almost lost my life at one point, so I know what that's like. And so I really can relate to these people who are, like, hanging outside of the towers, and I feel like I owe it to them.
That was terrible to watch them jump. It was tragic. What is this thing about thermite? Why were things 1,500 degrees 6 weeks after the event? I don't get it. What is that?
There's no evidence I've seen of thermite, and there's no evidence I've seen of high heat. There are things that glow. And as I like to say, hot things glow, but not everything that glows is hot. Think of a fluorescent light. It's not all that hot. But an incandescent bulb, you won't want to unscrew that with your bare hands. So just because it's glowing does not mean it's hot.
That's hard to get. Just because it's glowing doesn't mean it's hot. But it looked hot. The pictures I saw had orangey colors. And
there's pictures of a firefighter walking through, you know, this orange-looking flames, but the paper is not burning. You know, the paper around these toasted cars isn't burned. I've got a picture of a car where the plastic molding around the window is still there in pristine condition. But, you know, the bright work trim that goes around the window, that silvery kind of trim?
Right.
It's gone. And the paint underneath that is all blistered up. And it looks like the car was totally toasted, and there's a seatbelt hanging by the window. Window's gone, but the seatbelt's in pristine condition, the cloth seatbelt.
So how did this whole thermite story come into the mix?
Oh, I could speculate that it's a cover story. Yeah, the buildings were made out of steel frames with aluminum cladding. Thermite is powdered iron and aluminum. You know, that's what the buildings are made out of. So, of course, that's where you're going to find the dust. We'd have something seriously wrong if you didn't find that in the dust.
Because I remember some people saying, well, thermite was added, and that's how the building pancaked down, and there's this whole story and something with popular mechanics, and I don't really get that part of the...
Thermite is a welding material. It
okay.
melts things. And actually, the military has thermite grenades they use for starting fires. Like if you have an intruder and you have top secret documents, you set one of these things off to instantly burn all the papers in your office to keep the bad guys from getting it.
Okay.
So, you know, it instantly burns. But anything in a fine powder, you know, like you've heard of flower plants...
No.
Flour mills having dust fires, dust explosions.
I haven't heard that.
Yeah, fine powder can get ignited, and that's why they use you know, things like that. But thermite is used to weld railroad tracks. It doesn't turn things to powder.
Okay, I got it. So that doesn't explain how things turn to dust or powder.
Right, in mid-flight. You see, I call them wheat checks, you know, those sets of three columns, three stories tall, spandrel plates across them. They're prefab units that the buildings are made out of. On the outside, you see those flying through the air, trailing humongous amount of dust. It looks like an Alka-Seltzer tablet. And before it hits the ground, it's gone. I've got a video of, you know, one of these huge wheat checks, a cluster of several of them falling towards an intersection, and a picture of the intersection right afterwards just has paper in it. It's like the thing melted like ice cream, you know, in mid-flight. Almost like it was propulsion. You know, that wasn't just dirty, you know, windowsills putting out all that dust. It was actively, you know, effervescing like a Alka-Seltzer tablet.
Haven't you heard the translation that what happened is like a dust plume?
It was more than a dust plume because it kept going up and up, like almost like a tornado kind of, you know, funnel. The pictures from the satellite images.
Right.
You see this whitish, yellowish, you know, thing, and it makes it kind of a dog leg at some particular elevation. Then above that, it starts dissipating. When you blow up a building with bombs,
yeah,
I like to use the Seattle Kingdom for an example because there's a lot of evidence on it. But I can name several other ones. The biggest building ever was, I think, the Sears or some warehouse in Chicago that was blown up. And all of those, the dust really doesn't go much above the highest level of the building. And then it just drops out, you know, settles out like the Seattle Kingdom. They said, oh, it gummed up downtown with dust for almost 20 minutes. And then it's gone, settled out. It doesn't keep coming up for months. I've got pictures in March where they're, you know, they're always hosing it down. They're saying it's fire. But if it was hot fires, when it rained, you should have steam explosions. If, you know, you have molten metal. Actually, West Street, you know, the main drag on the west side of the complex, there was a broken water main, and the street flooded like a lake. And you had guys, you know, walking through there up to above their knees, and they didn't look like boiled chicken. So I don't think the water was hot. And if there had been hot material there, you know, Chernobyl blew up from a steam explosion.
I didn't know that.
When you get water and get it hot, it has to expand real fast. Yeah, it was a leak or something when they were doing a test in the wee hours. I guess water got to where it shouldn't be and got too hot and boom.
What does this mean if what happened on a forensic level is that all those buildings came down through some type of direct energy weapon?
It's a new technology. We ought to see about using that for energy instead of drilling holes in the earth and destroying the Gulf.
Direct energy weapons have been around for a long time.
Right. There's, you know, the lasers and masers and that type of thing. That's a different class.
Right.
But the interferometry type of energy, I mean, that's the way to go. Energy is in the air all around you. You just need to know how to tap into it.
What are you trying to get done with your work? What is it that you really want to make sure the public understands about what we witnessed on 9/11? Not the geopolitics, not the horror and tragedy. On a forensic level, what is the message to the public?
Look, we're usually kept so busy that we have to take somebody else's opinion for something, and that's gotten to the point that one person gives an opinion and it just ripples down. Everybody assumes that's what the story is. But if we all look with our own eyes, we can see, you know, what's what. And hopefully it would be terrific if we could all get together and decide we want to have free energy for all. But it really changes the makeup of the society.
Because?
Well, if you don't, if there's a need for energy, you know, it can't be an, you know, an economy based on getting money and buying things and selling things. Because if you don't need energy, what, you know, there's a different type of organization altogether. Part of my heritage is Native American, and when I think of my ancestors, you know, they didn't need to mow down some other culture and, you know, whoever is kicking them out and takes over turf. They instead had all sorts of interesting folklore and art and lived for centuries and centuries and centuries, you know, within their means. And I think that would be a wonderful way to head to.
Are you involved in any of the free energy projects or trying to promote or advocate any particular ones? Or
I don't know which one, you know, popular stuff. I you know, if it's popular, then it's infiltrated, is what I assume. Mm-hmm. Anything popularized, anything group-oriented is gets undermined. So things you do individually and quietly
have a chance,
yeah,
of seeing the light of day.
Right.
And what is your challenge right now, given the massive amounts of information you've compiled and analysis that you've done? What is your greatest challenge today?
Well, I would like to get the word out to folks, and I have a book coming out, hopefully, that it's finished, and I hope it it does get out there, and it just has the information. It just has the physical evidence in it. And if you look at it in terms of not a horror scene, but look at this technology, it's pretty amazing. Think of all the things you could do with it.
I don't think the average person can think of what you can do with it, because the direct energy weapon that you're describing, or this type of directed energy, was used for something destructive. So how do we imagine what it could be used for? Translate to us from a science point of view how we can start to imagine that being used for good.
Coral Castle.
Oh, I want to do an interview there. That is the most interesting place. Have you been?
I want to go. It's the same type of thing. You know, like the pyramids?
Yeah.
That's the same type of energy.
That is a definite anomaly. I want to actually do television there. I have already called them and they said yes.
I'm there. You know the song Billy Idol made famous, Sweet 16?
Yeah.
That was written about Ed Leedskalnin.
Really?
In Coral Castle.
Oh, wow.
Did somebody build a candy castle? He meant Coral Castle. And somebody, you know, made coral, you know, candy brain and filled it in. Well, it's made out of coral, coral brain.
Very, very interesting.
And, yeah, and it was his video was filmed there, too, I understand, on location. But that is the same technology. He lifted, what, 30,000 pound rocks? Or?
Right, and he did it at night when no one was looking and there was no crew or anything.
But the stones he lifted, the largest stones he lifted, were more than twice the size of the largest stones at the Great Pyramid.
Wow.
And, you know, he was, what, 100 pounds?
Yeah, he was a very, very frail guy, actually.
And he probably kept it a secret for the same reasons that Tesla did. But, you know, we don't need to risk, worry about, you know, somebody using it for evil, because they already are. So let's use it for good. You can build stuff. And, you know, he powered his home with his free energy.
Fascinating.
Rotating magnets.
One other question I want to ask you, because we're taking in a lot at one time. A lot of people were told that the airplane fuel is what brought down the buildings. Can you explain how that's not so, or why that's not so, if it's not so?
How many gallons and gallons of airplane fuel, and how many times was it reused and used over again? If, you know, if it burns this, how can it burn that at the same time? That's one issue.
I don't understand what you said. Say that again.
They assume that airplane fuel is limitless, like there's a zillion gallons of it. If it can burn up one floor, how can it burn up the whole building? As soon as you have something go into the air and burn instantly, it's gone. It might ignite a fire on the you know, 73rd floor, a paper fire. But, you know, it's burned itself up, if that were even the case. Also, if you're talking about hot fires, you're talking about melting. The buildings didn't melt. They turned to powder. So airplane fuel and fires do not cause things to turn to powder in mid-flight. You know, these pieces of steel were flying through the air and dissolved into powder as they were flying through the air in mid-flight.
How do we know that?
You look at the images. If you go to my website, drjudywood.com.
Okay, I'm there.
And /WTC. At the top of that page, there's some videos of these wheat chucks flying through the air.
I see it.
And right below that is the intersection where the guys come out of their hiding place afterwards, and you can tell from their gestures, the hands and the hips and so forth, there's like, my gosh, there's blue sky there. Where's the building? That intersection was where that stuff was headed. This
wow.
is paper.
I'm taking it in as we're doing this interview, and it's hard for me, too.
Right, because the other has been so ingrained there so long. But if you look at the Toasted Cars page, there's, on that one page, that's my Cliff Notes page, you got some of everything, or most of the categories. And a little sampling of each. There's, of course, a long series. You can get into more. But if you go to drjudywood.com /WTC, and at the top is a long list of different categories of evidence. And then you can click on those and go see samples of each of those down the page.
Okay.
The Twin Towers were destroyed faster than physics can explain by a free fall collapse. They underwent midair pulverization, turned to dust before they hit the ground. The protective bathtub was not significantly damaged by the destruction of the towers, yet they're worried about the earth-moving equipment hurting the bathtub. But they weren't worried about a 110-story building falling on it, hurting it. The rail lines and tunnels with path trains only had light damage. And in February, they pulled out some of the path trains, and they're completely intact. There were a couple that were smushed, but there's some that I think more of them were not smushed. The underground mall survived in most areas, and as witnessed by, you know, Roadrunner, he survived at the Warner Brothers store. Yeah, is that good? I forget what the name is, Foghorn Leghorn and Bugs Bunny. Those life-size characters from the store survived, and they're in some museum now. And the seismic impacts were less. You know, the Twin Towers had 30 times, that's 30 times, the potential energy of the King Dome. It would make 30 times as much boom. And yet the seismic signal that they produced was equal or less than the King Dome. So it's that's another issue. Okay, they were destroyed from the top down, not the bottom up. And whisper quiet destruction. That for 80% or 90% of the buildings were turned to dust. Only one file cabinet survived. That was from the Ben and Jerry's ice cream store. You have to kind of stretch things to realize it's a file cabinet. Looks like a football, kind of wadded up, crumpled up, but it still had colored file folders. So how is it, you know, crumpled up without burning, I mean, the paper? And they also had some money in it, they found. No toilets, we covered that one. Windows of the nearby buildings with the round holes in them and circular-shaped holes. And that is a sign of longitudinal waves, longitudinal energy waves.
What is that?
Instead of like a ripple type of wave, one that packs a punch, like the long direction of a slinky rather than the up and down direction. Think of a rubber band when you snap it. That's
okay.
A longitudinal wave. And a jump rope is the lateral kind. Another interesting thing is associated with explosions and also earthquakes, is S and P waves. And there were none detectable with the towers. It's those waves go through the earth. There were only surface waves. I thought that was interesting. The fuzz balls at the feet level, which are indicative of continuing breakdown of the dust. It started out as coarse particles, then became finer and finer and finer. Oh, and the truckloads of dirt that were brought in right afterwards. We got photos of a lineup of dirt trucks, and then they dump it and haul it back out. And I was there in 2007, and they're still hauling dirt in and out.
Why?
You'll have to ask them. But it was pretty interesting. They're still fuming. The ground has continued to fume. Bankers Trust, they needed to take down because it's got the ongoing process. And they still haven't finished taking it down. They're only halfway down. It's been contaminated by whatever this energy system is. It's what, almost 9 years later? If they're going to take a building apart, then building on the other side, Fiderman Hall, they just finished taking down this past December. And it had some contamination, too, or infection of this, ongoing energy reaction. There's a Swiss cheese appearance to beams. They're kind of half eaten out, if they're still there. There's some that are eaten out. That's evidence of molecular dissociation, the instantaneous rusting of things. What steel is mainly iron, but it has carbon and some other doodads added in that enhance its structural properties and also enhance its resistance to rust. If you take away those ingredients, you have pure iron. And I think everyone's experienced leaving an iron skillet in the sink with water in it.
Right.
It turns bright orange with rust.
Right. I do remember that.
We had steel pipes with bright orange rust on them instantly, as though they had become pure iron on the surface at the World Trade Center. Pretty interesting. Rustification is what I'm calling it. Weird fires. I just call them weird fires. They look like fire, but without high heat. Here's an example. Aluminum glows like any other metal at 1,000 centigrade and higher. But the trouble is, at 600 degrees, aluminum melts. So that means if aluminum is going to glow, it'll be in its melted state. We have an image of pieces of outer aluminum cladding, still rigid, that are glowing. Now explain that. If they're hot enough to glow, things glow, above 1,000 or 1,200 degrees centigrade. Aluminum should be a puddle, but it's still rigid, but it's glowing. I think that's a pretty good indication that it's not hot. It's glowing for another reason.
Can you explain that?
There's something that's sort of related to it. Have you ever heard of St. Elmo's fire?
I mean, I've heard of it. I don't understand it.
It's sort of an electrical thing. Plasmas are an ionized gas where there's extra electrons floating around or not enough. Where electrons are moving, to atoms or away from atoms, and that's where the light comes from, depending on what environment they're in. And I kind of think that's related to these weird apparent fires that do, probably turn into fires, but they start out this other thing that is not a normal fire. There were firefighters who said, we're trying to put out the car fires, but the water had no effect on these fires. That's an interesting comment. So they're going to, get foam and see if that was going to help. Weird fires is another thing associated with the Hutchison effect. I think they're all sort of the same thing, as well as cold fusion. You can get it kind of glowing. Also, transmutation is another issue, where elements actually change. John Hutchison has a sample of brass, which is high in copper.
Right.
It has some zinc in it. And then the area that is affected has equal copper and zinc, where before it had, you know, many times more copper. So, you know, you can say, okay, it's got hot and some of the copper left. Well, the zinc's going to go away sooner. The zinc has a lower boiling temperature and melting temperature than copper. So why are they now equal where the unaffected one, copper, was much higher? Well, if you, you know, take one proton of one and hand it to the other one, you turn copper into zinc. And it appears that's what's happening, and that is transmutation, which is thought to only occur, you know, at temperatures as hot as the sun. The same with fusion. But you get that same thing of transmutation at room temperature or near room temperature with cold fusion. And I think it's all the same kind of process where temperature as hot as the sun is equivalent to, you know, somebody breaking into a house with a crowbar and a bulldozer versus using a key to open the front door.
Interesting.
So if you have the right key to get the door open, you can access that free energy.
How many hits do you get? Do you track your site's hits?
I get 600 or so. Sometimes it goes up, sometimes it goes down.
A day?
Yeah.
Have you ever had your site attacked?
Not yet. Not a whole lot. I used to have a free tripod site. That was Jane Doe. And they started making it so that anybody with Internet Explorer with Microsoft Windows couldn't see my website. So somebody donated web space for me for my new site, and that's how I have it.
That's great. Is this on blog software? Or are you on WordPress, or just this is a regular site?
Just a regular site. Andrew Johnson, who has checktheevidence.com in the UK, set the site up for him. It was wonderful of him to do that. He also set one up for John Hutchison because his site was attacked and was taken over by a call them trolls. You know, lead followers, get out of the way. If they're in the way, they're call them trolls. And who hijacked his site and were putting fake videos on there saying that was, you know, John's fake videos.
Got it. Well, you're very brave to do what you're doing. What is it going to take for people to become more receptive to your body of work, at least in understanding on the forensic level the truth about what happened, that what we've been told and maybe what we've been telling each other and the way the buildings came down is not something that we've understood before?
I highly recommend reading my book. I mean, I know that sounds a little bit self-serving, but it's not. I've carefully put things together in a particular order and shown all the different classes of evidence in such a way that if one thing doesn't meet your fancy, another thing does. You know, of course, we have the toasted cars, and we have holes, and then holes in the ground, and jumpers is various aspects. And every single one of the chapters by itself is evident of what happened.
And where do we buy this book? Do we go to Amazon? Or?
You can place orders right now on Amazon. On my website, when it's available, I'll put a link up there.
And what is the name of it?
Where Did the Towers Go?
Okay. Well, I really appreciate you coming to It's Rainmaking Time to talk about something I've considered an anomaly for a long time and really felt like there wasn't the proper place to talk about it in a broadcast setting. There wasn't the proper context laid out. There wasn't a call for a real deep, honest, forensic look at this. I imagine that there is opposition to what you're saying, isn't there?
They call themselves the truth movement, and
yes.
I'm like contraband.
Because?
They have an agenda, I think, and I don't fit their agenda. So I'm called COINTELPRO. And whatever the name calling, it doesn't address the evidence, and I only want to address the evidence. And there's a pretty interesting, and if you start looking at it, it gets really intriguing. You go, oh, my gosh. Like I got a picture of this bus that was on the street. and it looks like it burned up, but you look at it, there's no scorch marks on it whatsoever. None. So what happened to it? And you start getting more intrigued, you know, in terms of that, and realize knowing about it doesn't cause it to happen again. It does the opposite. And understanding it. And if you just start looking at the actual evidence, but also think about the people. Those people, we owe it to them to know what happened to them.
I think in life that projects and ventures and solutions and discoveries, new knowledge, ancient knowledge, like art and poetry, find their instruments, find their house, find their place of highest receptivity. So I believe that the forensic examination of the buildings of 9/11 came to you. As much as you came to it, it came to you. And I appreciate you coming to us to share something that you've been led to focus on and risk your reputation and your life to solving the forensic anomaly of 9/11 buildings. Thank you so much for being here, Dr. Judy Wood.
Thank you so much for having me.
I hope you'll come back another time.
I would love to.
Thank you so much.